We will talk about the election results in this post-election edition of our Week in Review.
Despite all the hardship we've been through, despite all the frustrations of Washington, I've never been more hopeful about our future.
And so Ann and I join with you to earnestly pray for him and for this great nation.
But I didn't run to make history. I ran to make a difference.
I certainly didn't need the job. And I guess I'm not, going to get it.
Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Friday, November 9th. Why we voted the way we voted and what it means for the state of the nation and Wisconsin. Join us with your reflections at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our two Week in Review guests today are Matt Rothschild, publisher of the Progressive Magazine. Good morning, Matt.
Hey, Joy.
And Kevin Hermaning. He is a financial planner, a political activist, former chair of the Marathon County Republican Party, and he joins us from his office in Ohio. What are you doing in Ohio, Kevin?
Well, at first I thought I might come down for a recount, but I have to do audits once a year of each of our offices, and so I'm down here. A couple of weeks ago I was out in Phoenix, but of course spend most of my time in Wisconsin, just a few days a year out of state.
Yeah, well, were you in Wisconsin on election night?
I absolutely was, yes. Flew out the next morning, though, at 6:30, and I'll return in a few hours.
And were you kind of bummed out, Kevin, with the election results?
Well, definitely disappointed in the results, though glad to see that Scott Fitzgerald resumed his role as Senate Majority Leader in the state of Wisconsin, and even the Assembly in Wisconsin picked up a few seats for the Republicans, but of course disappointed in the fact that Tommy Thompson was defeated, and of course that Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan did not make plans to move into the White House in January.
And you, Matt Rothschild, I know you were doing a election night commentary and analysis on the local CBS affiliate here in Madison, Channel 3, on election night. You are, for the most part, celebrating the election results?
I haven't gotten over the euphoria yet, Joy. I mean, it was a great night for not just President Obama, but who I disagree with on a lot of issues, but for a progressive coalition that brought him back to the White House. This is twice progressives have put him in the White House. For the progressive message that he articulated late in the campaign that resonated across the country. And also for Tammy Baldwin. It is so nice to be there when history is being made. It was great to be there when Obama was elected the first time and to take strides forward on this question of racial justice in the United States. And then to be around for Tammy Baldwin's victory, a huge step forward for women in Wisconsin and for gays and lesbians around the country. And so I was thrilled, especially with Tammy Baldwin's victory, but also very happy about President Obama's victory, because it was such a setback for the forces of reaction and ugliness in this country. And had those forces won, it would have been a very, very hard and bitter pill to swallow.
You know, Kevin, I read this morning that Senator Ron Johnson, in an interview, made some remarks along the lines that he thinks that maybe the voters were uninformed when they chose President Obama and Tammy Baldwin. Do you think that's the case?
Well, you know, I think that conservatives and by and large Republicans feel that Tammy Baldwin and President Obama ran away from their records. They ran away from who they were for the average voter out there who doesn't live and breathe politics every day. You cannot campaign as a tax and regulatory reformer when you have a record of increasing taxes on small businesses and employers and regulatory burdens on the job creators. And yet that's exactly what President Obama did. That's exactly what then Congresswoman Tammy Baldwin, Senator-elect Tammy Baldwin did in their campaigns. And so you know, conservatives and Republicans knew how these folks have governed, legislated these last many years. And yet conservatives, of course, do not make up a majority. Political conservatives do not make up a majority of the population. It is that big swing in the middle, those independents, those moderates who make the final decision at the polling place on election days, and they're the ones who need to be persuaded. And, you know, if you run away from who you are and you don't articulate, and frankly, if the opponents do not adequately articulate who their opponents are, in this case, both of them incumbents, or I guess not Tammy Baldwin, but a sitting congresswoman, and have it described as to who they were without all of the bitterness and anger and negativity, pointing out the records, you're going to get a confused electorate. Not just confused, but angry and disgusted with the overall process. Way too much money in the process, way too much time spent belittling their opponents. Republicans, Democrats, both are responsible for this, of course. You know, you saw some libertarians in some parts of the state split the vote. Talk show host Pat Snyder from Wausau was defeated by fewer votes than the number of votes that the libertarian candidate received up there. So one of the teachers who spent time in Madison beating drums and protesting this past year in Madison is now coming down as the new assemblywoman. So, you know, Republicans, Democrats are to blame for the negativity, and perhaps there might be something that'll be learned. We're never, of course, going to return to the days of Bill Proxmire where you can run statewide for $100. But the number of dollars that went into this campaign was just astronomically ridiculous.
Matt, I want to comment on the money, but also the Ron Johnson's, Senator Johnson's comment that the electorate was uninformed when it elected Barack Obama and Tammy Baldwin.
Well, I agree with Kevin. There's way too much money in politics. We've got to get it out. We should amend the Constitution of the United States to say that corporations aren't persons and money's not speech, and that we can regulate advertisements during elections, because people shouldn't be able to throw this much money at people and at the screen. It was hideous to watch those commercials time and time again. But look, this idea that it was the uninformed voter or the deceived voter that brought Barack Obama back to the White House and Tammy Baldwin into the U.S. Senate is just ridiculous. Tammy Baldwin ran as a proud progressive. She said she was a proud liberal, proud progressive in the tradition of La Follette and Feingold. She was very upfront about her defense of the Affordable Care Act. After all, she had introduced the piece of legislation in the Affordable Care Act that gave health care coverage to young people between the ages of 21 and 26 so they could be covered on their parents' health insurance. That gave health coverage to 3 million young people and a great relief to 6 million parents. And so she was very proud of that and upfront about that. President Obama in the last couple of weeks ran a campaign where he said the folks at the top don't need another champion. He wasn't trying to run as someone other than a progressive Democrat. I wish he'd been more progressive in the White House for the last 4 years, but he certainly wasn't hiding his agenda to tax the rich and to represent the 99%. By the same token, or on the other side, if you will, Mitt Romney was the candidate of the 1%. People understood that. He was a multi-millionaire, and he was running to defend the interests of millionaires and billionaires. I don't think people were ill-informed, except those who were on an IV drip watching Fox News constantly.
We have lots more to talk about, but callers as well. Dave in Wanakee is with us first. Hello, Dave.
I'm a little disappointed in hearing the reaction from Republicans. It sounds like they haven't learned anything from their humiliating defeat on Tuesday when the nation went liberal. I would suggest, after the heat of the rhetoric dies down, to look at California. They're the harbinger of the future, politically, usually. California has super majorities for Democrats. They could pass constitutional amendments if they like. They increased taxes in a bad economy. That's the future for Republicans.
All right. Kevin, is that the future for Republicans?
Well, not listening to Mitch McConnell and John Boehner and Sean Duffy and Paul Ryan, no, I don't think that's the future of the Republicans at all. Republicans are not going to step aside and let President Obama destroy the rest of the economy. They're not going to step aside and say, yep, go ahead and put your agenda full force out there. What the Republicans in part need to do, of course, is to be more responsive and interested, I believe, in the large and growing minority population's interest in being a part of the American dream. Clearly, immigration became a problem. The immigration policies and proposals became a problem for the Republican candidates in many parts of the country this year. Of course, we have a brand new senator from the state of Texas going to Washington, Ted Cruz, who's going to go out to Washington and join Senator Marco Rubio. So you have a Hispanic and a Cuban, both strong advocates for legal immigration, but also being sensitive to how it is we're going to be able to solve this overall immigration problem of more than 20 million people who've come into this country illegally. It's ironic and interesting that those who waited in line and followed the rules are the among the people who are the most most outspoken and strongest in advocating for some kind of legal reform that immigration reform that doesn't just give a free pass. Yet you have the open borders folks who would just as soon allow anybody to participate in the American dream without following any rules. We have borders. We have governments that we have a government, state and local governments, which and national government, which needs to play a role in all of this. But I don't believe that the Republicans are just going to step aside. I mean, Matt said earlier that, you know, we need to regulate free speech. He didn't use those words. He said we need to regulate advertising and deny corporations. Presumably, he also meant unions, the ability to participate in free and fair and open elections. Frankly, if you have disclosure, who cares who's funding it as long as people know where the money's coming from?
That's my particular view on it. Yeah, let's talk a little bit about the message being sent, Matt, and whether Republicans learned their lesson or not, as our caller put it.
Well, I think on this question of the Latino vote, the Republicans seem to have learned a lesson. I saw on CNN on election night their Latina analyst, I think her name is Ana Navarro, say that Romney self-deported from the White House because he had made that comment about immigrants who are undocumented, that they would self-deport under a Romney administration. And that was so insensitive to a lot of immigrants and Latinos that they lost big. I mean, the Latino vote went overwhelmingly for Obama this time, 70 or 75%. And it's also because Romney opposed the DREAM Act. I mean, here was a piece of legislation, and most Republicans did too, that wanted to penalize people who made or open a path to legalization to people who came over here as adults and broke the law by coming over here when they did so. But very young children who came over with their parents were penalizing those children. And so what President Obama did by giving some of these dreamers the opportunity to stay in the United States at least for a couple years without fear of harassment and deportation if they're still in college or if they want to serve the U.S. Armed Forces was a great thing. And I think almost all immigrants and all Latinos recognize that. And if the Republican Party couldn't even get behind that, that was very distressing for people. So I think on this question of immigration, maybe the Republican Party is going to come around, at least in a tokenistic way. But on some of the other issues, I don't see them moderating their position. And one issue in particular that I want to underline was this Neanderthal view on a woman's right to choose if she's been impregnated by a rapist. And it's just unbelievable to me that there was Todd Aiken, not just Aiken, and Richard Murdoch from Indiana, Aiken from Missouri, who both went down because of their primitive comments on the subject. But also, there is Paul Ryan, who has the exact same view, who said it's a method of conception, a woman who's impregnated by her rapist. And that kind of callousness, that kind of troglodyte attitude hurt the Republican Party across the board, especially with women.
Let's take a quick break. We are talking with Matt Rothschild, publisher of the Progressive Magazine, and Kevin Hermaning, who is a financial planner and a political activist, former chair of the Marathon County Republican Party, talking about the news of the week. President Obama wins a second term. Tammy bests Tommy for Wisconsin's U.S. Senate seat. Republicans retake full control of state government by winning Senate seats this week. We are talking about it all and wondering what it all means. We're discussing the fallout from this week's national and state elections during this edition of The Week in Review. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Matt Rothschild and Kevin Hermaning during this edition, this post-election edition of our Week in Review. There'll be more talk about elections or whatever news story of the week you want to talk about during At Issue with Ben Marins. It's your views on the news every Friday after 4. Let's take another caller, and that is Rose in Ashland. Hello, Rose.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. First of all, I resent Kevin saying that people who voted for Obama were uninformed.
Senator Johnson said that originally.
Oh, okay, but he also agreed with it. He did not deny it. And that's a level of arrogance that causes a breakdown in communication and compromise. Why would I want to talk with someone who starts out with that attitude? When Tommy Thompson said that he was the one to get rid of Medicare, I knew that he was someone I could not support. I voted for Obama to keep the Affordable Care Act, but the elephant in the room that people will not talk about is veterans health care, which is socialized medicine. If it is good enough for the vets, it should be good enough for all of us. And I don't understand. If you ask vets, they don't want to get rid of their health care. They will not give it up.
All right. Thank you very much, Rose. I'd like to kind of keep it to the fallout from the election during this show. And certainly Obamacare is one of the issues that is in the news still this week, with a lot of states are saying they're not going to set up these exchanges. And I'm wondering, Kevin, your thoughts on Obamacare and its future.
Well, clearly the U.S. Supreme Court said it's constitutional. Many of us believe that Judge Roberts wasn't thinking straight on that. And I think you're seeing an increasing number of people responding to the results of the elections by announcing job layoffs. I'm here in Ohio right now, as you mentioned at the outset, and just this morning, the CEO, the president of the Murray Energy Company, announced to his employees, actually I guess it happened yesterday, that he was going to be laying off 156 of his employees here in Ohio and in the state of Utah. It's clear that the election itself did not result in his decision to lay people off. But I would imagine that he saw the handwriting on the wall and the costs of Obamacare and the costs of regulatory burdens. And it's a coal company, so the cost of EPA regulations basically saying to the nation's coal mining industry, you know, there's no place for you at the table when discussing energy independence in the United States. And so Obamacare is a big deal. There are CFOs of actual hospitals in the state of Wisconsin who are saying that it's no wonder that small businesses are laying people off because of the Obamacare mandates, and the hospital itself is going to be reducing and eventually probably eliminating health care for their own employees. So I was online myself as a small business owner over the course of the last 2 days looking at some of these credits that are part of the Obama tax code, Obamacare tax code. I don't think that small business owners who do provide health insurance to their employees even understand what the so-called credits are going to be all about. They only apply to businesses which pay their employees less than $25,000. So why they think this is a good deal, it doesn't make any sense to me.
Matt, the future of the Affordable Care Act, or as President Obama says, he doesn't mind it being called Obamacare.
Well, I do. I think that was a mistake for him to say during the debate. It's the Affordable Care Act. It's not about President Obama. It's getting people affordable coverage. And first of all, Governor Walker and the other Republican governors around the country ought to obey the law. It's not only passed the Congress and was signed by the president, but as Kevin said, was upheld by the U.S. Supreme Court. So if they're not upholding the law, the Justice Department ought to come down hard on them. And also for the people in states like Wisconsin where the Republicans are dragging their feet, we should start yelling and screaming because we deserve to get the coverage that our legislators and the president and the Supreme Court said is ours to get. And we should get it. I mean, the Affordable Care Act allows guarantees you coverage if you've got a pre-existing condition or if your loved one has a pre-existing condition. What if your loved one's got cancer? What if you have cancer? What if your kid's got leukemia? You don't want that kid to get coverage, to get health care treatment? You want that person just to die or have to run to the emergency room when, you know, they spike a huge fever or they are having trouble breathing? I mean, that's how barbaric our current system of health care is. And the Affordable Care Act allows a correction of this terrible moral failing of our current healthcare system. And that, among other reasons, is a great reason to defend the Affordable Care Act. And I think when people understood that during the election, they went behind the Affordable Care Act. And Tammy Baldwin made a great case about supporting the Affordable Care Act for pre-existing conditions and some of the other great merits of that program.
Let me zero in specifically on the news this morning that Governor Walker yesterday said he's going to decide he has to decide very soon next week. He may let the federal government set up these state health insurance exchanges rather than Wisconsin set them up ourselves. Kevin, should the governor have the federal government set up those exchanges?
Well, I think that the governor's on the right path. If the federal government wants to have a law related to health care, then the federal government ought to pay for it. It's about time. But the reality is that these things are much better done at the local levels. Matt is throwing out something that is a red herring, the idea that people are denied health care coverage for pre-existing conditions. It's not true.
Oh, come on. Come on.
Matt, the fact that Matt, excuse me, I didn't interrupt you.
Yeah, actually you did.
Well, but you didn't stop talking.
So. All right, well, so make that point. We don't want to debate.
Joy, the state of Wisconsin has had a program in place for more than 20 years. I know because my family was on the high-risk insurance plan. People who had pre-existing conditions are covered through that program. And what's wrong with the states regulating and putting in place programs like this? Why do we have to have a federal program that handles health care when, again, these things are much better handled at a more local level?
All right. Well, in any case, even Governor Walker says the Affordable Care Act, he says he thought it was a bad idea for the people of Wisconsin, but it's the law and it's not going to change. So let's not debate that during the week in review. Let's take another call, and that would be Diana in Green Bay. Hi, Diana.
Hi. I was just calling to say that I voted Democrat all the way, and the reason I did is that the Republicans signed a pledge to Norquist and the Tea Party and United States of ALEC, which I think really needs to be investigated and brought out for people to know what that is. I think that goes against the pledge that they took when they were voted into office by we, the people.
All right. Thank you very much, Diana. Matt, maybe you start this round, the Norquist pledge and ALEC.
Okay. If I can just disobey your injunction and just say why. State by state. I mean, if Wisconsin's covering people for pre-existing conditions, that's great for Wisconsin. But what if you're unfortunate enough to have a fatal disease, your kid has one in Mississippi? These are rights that people should have, the right to health care coverage. Look, the Republican Party has been captured by the farthest right-wing aspects of it. Actually, two aspects of the Republican Party have captured that party. One is the social conservatives, the people who want to totally outlaw abortion and gay marriage. The other one is this corporatist group, which Diana's talking about. This is Grover Norquist, Americans for Prosperity, the Koch brothers, and ALEC. She mentioned ALEC, which stands for the American Legislative Exchange Council, which is a group of corporations and Republican legislators that get together, and actually the corporations write the laws and hand them over to the legislators to pass the laws.
The Norquist Pledge and ALEC?
Well, you know, corporations and unions and other special interests have been acting as lobbyists and acting as political organizers since long before any of us were around here. And I don't think anything along those lines is going to change. The fact of the matter is the Republicans lost this election for the presidency, but the American people voted to put the money decisions, meaning the House, which is the House of Representatives, which is where all spending bills are initiated, in the hands of the Republicans. The Republicans maintained, I believe, even increased their majority in the House of Representatives. And I frankly, when you look back at the last 8 of 10 elections and see the House being given, that's 20 years, 10 elections being given to the Republicans, the American people know that they don't want to be Greece. It's very difficult to defeat a president running for re-election. The perks of incumbency are huge. And you know what? It is true that the American people would rather vote for the devil they know than for the devil they don't know. And Governor Romney simply was unable to relate to or become familiar enough with or to the average American. I think Matt is right. Clearly, the polls showed that the American people, the independents in particular, I should say only the independents, viewed Governor Romney as too rich to relate to the average person. I personally think it's hogwash. I think he's a job creator. He was a solver and would have done a much better job at ending this fiscal cliff that we're facing as a nation and has the challenges that this government is going to face for the next 6 weeks has led to a sell-off of over almost 500 points in the stock market in 2 days than President Obama. And we're going to hear from him in a few minutes, I believe, and we'll see what he has to say before I'm sure he heads out of town to Las Vegas again.
Let's take Mike in Oshkosh. Hello, Mike.
Hi, good morning. I'm wondering what the guests think is going to happen when we actually start dealing with the elephant living room, which is the national debt. It's, you know, it's frankly approaching $100 trillion when you throw in the unfunded obligations to Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security. So we've got this $100 trillion debt. We had two campaigns that essentially avoided it, you know, throughout this thing. Neither of them were willing to talk to the American people and ask for sacrifice. They were competing to tell us what we wanted to hear more than anything else. So as we move forward, is the president going to move on Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security? He's got, it's a 3-to-1 ratio of cuts to tax increases. He didn't do it in the first term. He chickened out with Simpson-Bowles. So is he actually going to move, and then is the Republican side going to do something on taxes and ditch Grover Norquist and meet in the middle?
So the gridlock, Matt, what do you think? Is there going to be any, is there going to be a way to avoid this fiscal cliff?
Well, I certainly don't think President Obama should compromise on Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. It would be a tragedy if, after having won this election with huge support from progressives, that he would sacrifice it all with his predilection to compromise. Look, I think what we need to do, if you're seriously worried about the national debt, is stop engaging in wars all the time and reduce this Pentagon spending. We spend more on the Pentagon, on military spending in the United States, than the next 15, 18 countries combined, including Russia and China. There's no reason we can't increase taxes on the top 1%. Look, back in the days of Dwight Eisenhower, the top marginal tax rate was 91%, 92%. It's now down at what? In the mid-30s. And all Obama wants to do is bring it up to 39% or 39.5%. And the rich and the representatives of the rich, the Republican Party, are just screaming bloody murder. There's no reason we shouldn't have a healthy estate tax. Estate tax was something that Fighting Bob La Follette introduced here in Wisconsin more than 100 years ago. And the estate tax has been pretty much rendered meaningless except for families that have estates over $6 million, though that's changing if these Bush tax cuts aren't renewed. I imagine of all the Bush tax cuts, the one that's helping the richest 0.5% of the American public is the one that they're going to agree on, because the super wealthy want to be able to pass on as much money to their spoiled little kids as they can, and that's going to happen again, I think.
What do you think is going to happen, Kevin? Are House Republicans going to budge at all on taxes, and would the president budge on entitlements?
If they seriously intend to address the fiscal cliff, remember, this is a law that was passed only a year and a half ago by Congress, and or within the last year and a half. It had provisions from 2011 when they raised the debt ceiling, and then more laws that and legislation that was passed and then signed by the president over the last year and a half. But I do not believe that Republicans are willing to give at all on tax rates. I do believe that they're willing to give on closing loopholes that affect only a small minority of the population. You know, you can raise taxes 100% on every citizen in the United States. You're not going to, in 1 year, close the deficit and debt and get rid of our reliance on Chinese lending. The fact of the matter, in my view, is that spending cuts, especially to the entitlements, are going to be or have to be a big part of resolving the problem. If we go forward and have the sequestration of take place, and the implications are going to become very clear, whether on the troops or our military readiness or the workforce and industry which supports it, you know, members of Congress are trying to address their own self-inflicted wound. They're going to have to do it. So they've got to come up with some other defense cuts, but it's really going to come down to the big costs of running this government, which are the entitlements. And here we are during a very difficult economic time. The president said a year ago that the reason he would support the renewal of the Bush tax cuts from 2003 is because the economy was not very strong. Well, there aren't too many people who think that the economy is very strong. Boeing just announced a whole series of tax cuts. There are energy companies which are, I'm sorry, of job layoffs. Energy companies are announcing layoffs. Technology companies are, and healthcare companies are announcing layoffs. And our economy is not as strong as people are purporting it to be on the Democratic side. And I think you're going to have to see some compromise here, but it's going to probably come in the form of closing of loopholes. I think that Matt's right. The estate tax is probably going to change. Quite frankly, dead people don't vote, so they don't have a big lobby. And so I think you've got the makings of a solution. But there are so many areas that this government can cut its spending that aren't even on the entitlement side. You could go to Foreign Agriculture Service. You could go to the Community Development Block Grant Program. You could go to returning Pell Grants, maybe just to their 2010 funding levels, which is still double what they were 5 years ago. You could go to a lot of areas and just roll it back, which would help the rest of the world and American investors and American small businesses kind of start to breathe again and maybe think that we're going to be able to grow ourselves out of this mess.
John in Appleton is with us now. Hello, John.
Hi, so Kevin Hermaning made just before a comment, and I've heard it from other Republican members of the House of Representatives, and this is all about the argument about mandates in terms of what did the voters tell us and regarding what policies should be passed, and saying that, okay, yes, the Democrats did well for the White House and the Senate, but the Republicans were reelected in the House. And I saw an analysis, and undoubtedly it's incomplete, some of the votes are still being counted, but that nationally overall, that more people voted for Democrats to be in the House of Representatives than voted for Republicans. But the reason that's not reflected in the composition of the House itself is the amount of gerrymandering of districts that happened in the last census. Texas, North Carolina, Pennsylvania were the most egregious examples of that, but also somewhat in Wisconsin.
All right, so Republicans kept their House seats because of gerrymandering, Kevin Hermaning?
It sounds a little bit like the argument that Republicans used to use against Congressman Dave Obey and others who served for 30 and 40, in David Obey's case for 41 years, because of the redistricting and the gerrymandering which took place. I think if people look seriously at the vote turnout, I have not looked at the numbers that the caller is asserting are the case. Let's go with his situation or with his assertion as being fact. I don't know if it's true or not, but let's just go with that. I would imagine that some of the reason for that is there are parts of the country, Texas, Utah, Wyoming, where House races really are not competitive, where in some cases there are not even opponents on the Democratic side, because in some legislative districts there have never, ever been an individual elected to those seats from the other party, and so there isn't even an opponent. And so votes cast in those elections, of course, are going to be depressed compared to the presidential race or other competitive elections. I don't know if that's the case or not, but redistricting and gerrymandering have been part of our government and the perks of winning elections and leadership for the last 230 years.
Matt?
Well, John makes a solid point, and I saw that same article that said more Democrats voted for House members than Republicans. And if that's the case, it just totally undermines the comment that Kevin had made prior that people want Republicans in the House and Republican economic policies. Look, there was a huge turnout in this election nationwide on Tuesday. President Obama ran on a campaign of defending Social Security, defending Medicare, defending Medicaid, and making the rich pay some of their fair share. And now all of a sudden Republicans are saying, no, we're not going to agree to a single bit of that, and we're going to force you to cut Medicare, Social Security, or Medicaid. And that's ridiculous. We just had a referendum on these issues.
We're going to move to Michael in Green Bay next. Hello, Michael.
Oh, yeah. Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to say that I'm conservative, but I think all of the Bush tax cuts need to be allowed to expire because our financial situation is extremely dire. I think we also have decided as a society to be a high-benefit society. And in general, when you look at other countries like Germany, the tax rate is very high, so that even lower-income people would probably pay about 30%, and higher-income people maybe 60%. But it works, and it balances the budget. So I think, in general, if we want a high-benefit society, we need to be prepared to pay the taxes for it, and that includes everybody.
Yeah, thanks, Michael. Meanwhile, Anthony on Facebook writes, we could tax the rich 100% and it wouldn't dent our deficit. We need other major changes. Obama's health care added more than our wars. The over-excessive debt of the average American household has caused this just as much as Clinton, Bush, Obama's policies. Time to get real and responsible here. Matt, your thoughts on taxes, and should as Michael put it, we allow all of the Bush tax cuts to expire?
Well, I think the tax cuts for the middle class should be kept. I just think that the tax cuts for the top, the top people should not benefit from those Bush tax cuts that they've been benefiting from for, 10 years now. Anthony repeated something Kevin said, which is, you could tax the rich 100%. It's not going to make a dent in things. Well, it would make a huge dent in the so-called deficit in Social Security if you just lifted the ceiling on the withholding for Social Security. That would essentially solve all the liquidity problems in Social Security that aren't happening right now. It's not in crisis right now, that are going to happen sometime in the year, 2037 or 2034, when Social Security would still be able to pay out 75%. But if you lifted the ceiling on the withholding for Social Security so that Warren Buffett pays the same amount as the person who's making $112,000, that makes sense to me. I like what Michael had to say about a high-benefit society. Look, he mentioned Germany, Scandinavia, France. These European social democratic countries want a better life, and they have than we have here, and they have better social programs than we have here, and they have greater levels of happiness on every poll about happiness and happiness indicators. They score much better than we do. We're still kind of tooth and claw here in some parts of America, where people are staying in their job only because they have health care. They hate their job, and that's not right.
Kevin?
I really can't believe that people hold up Finland and France as models for what they would like the United States to be like. The people of France, the people of Finland, Norway, Scandinavia, Sweden, the rest, they have more people who do not have an opportunity to absolutely make the best of their own lives, because most of their life is run by and controlled by the government. That isn't why people came to the United States, and if people don't like that aspect of the United States, yeah, some people are trying to equalize things that way. They're trying to equalize results and destroy opportunity in the United States. Some people might suggest that that's what folks voted for the other day. I don't buy that that's what they voted for. They voted for President Obama because he was perceived as being more able to relate to the average middle-class person, because Governor Romney was viewed as supporting programs and policies for the wealthy, and the independents didn't find that appealing. If you look at the real results, though, 8 of the top 10 wealthiest counties in the United States. There's only two in New Jersey that this of the top 10 that this comment does not apply to. 8 of the top 10 voted overwhelmingly for Barack Obama. It seems to me that the corporatist interests really favored Barack Obama. They gave him the most money. They had the biggest fundraisers. And yet he was able to delude the average person into believing that he was going to be more responsive. We have a greater spread today between the haves and the have-nots than we had 4 years ago when George Bush left office. It's just we have a lot more have-nots. And how long is President Obama going to be blaming Bush policies when eventually the average person is going to have to step back and say, are these policies really helping the United States? Are they really helping the middle class? Are they really helping give people a hand up rather than a handout? And I don't think that it's going to last forever. It may not even his honeymoon may be a lot shorter lived than a lot of people believe.
Matt, briefly on that point, because we're way past our break time.
Sure. Just a fact check. It's just not true that Democrats, the rich Democrats, gave more money than rich Republicans. Billionaires by 2-1 or 3-1 margin gave more to the Republican Party and Republican PACs than Democrats did to Democratic Party and Democratic PACs. And then if you go down, the richest percentage of people voted for Republicans, and the poorer you got, the more you voted for Democrats. It's all in the data.
Matt Rothschild is publisher of the Progressive magazine. Kevin Hermaning is a financial planner, political activist, former chair of the Marathon County Republican Party. Our two guests for this edition of The Week in Review, it's our election hangover edition of The Week in Review, talking about how we voted this week and why and what it means. And we will continue in just a moment to coming back with our Week in Review quiz. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Week in Review on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Time for the Week in Review quiz. President Barack Obama broke the record for most retweeted tweet this week with 4 more years and a picture of him and Michelle hugging. Who previously held the record for most retweeted tweet? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We will randomly select a winner from all of the correct answers, and the winner will get a book that we featured on the program recently. We'll give the winner a choice of books that we've featured recently, and we'll reveal the winner and the answer at the end of the Week in Review. We are talking with Matt Rothschild and Kevin Hermaning during this edition of The Week in Review, going over election results and what they all mean. A number of other topics that we wanted to touch on before we end this program, including Tuesday, a big day for gay marriage backers in Maine, Maryland, and Washington. First states to approve same-sex marriage by popular vote. In Minnesota, voters rejected a proposal to place a ban on gay marriage in the state constitution. Supporters say they will push for similar measures in other states. Matt Rothschild, what do you make of those election results?
Well, again, this was just huge cause for celebration for people across the progressive community in this country, and especially in the gay and lesbian community who had lost one of these referendums after another. But the tide has turned on this. History has come around on this, and gays and lesbians have won this great nonviolent revolution over the last 50 years to demonstrate that they deserve equality in this country. And so it was just a tremendous night on those referendums, and also for Tammy Baldwin to become the first openly gay or lesbian member of the U.S. Senate, that traditional millionaires boys club.
Mm-hmm. Kevin.
You know, I think the issue of gay marriage is one which is clearly part of the cultural, but also part of the demographic shift in the United States, one that the Republicans are increasingly going to have to address and sift through. Most of the people who I know who perhaps lean a little bit more libertarian on a lot of issues, perhaps while not favoring gay marriage as an institution, really would prefer to not really care what people do in the privacy of their own homes, as long as it's not illegal. And that's, I guess, the major point there. But it is cultural. It's also it's also demographic, but it also should be left to the states. and local municipalities. It's not something that should be regulated or done at the federal level. Clearly, there is still a big division in this area across the United States, and so these are areas that each state should get to and be able to sort out on their own. Wisconsin's done it. We saw the states act this week in both directions, and what's wrong with it having been done at the state level? It's just not something that should be, in my view, and I think it's apparent to me by most Republicans and conservatives, something that should be institutionalized by the federal government.
Let me, you mentioned Tammy Baldwin being the first openly gay woman to be sent to the U.S. Senate, Matt. Why do you think Wisconsin voters did that and at the same time gave Republicans full control of state government?
I think these races were individual a lot, and I think Tammy Baldwin ran a brilliant campaign. Her ads were right spot on when she was running one ad after another saying, Tommy Thompson, he's not for you anymore. And then late in the day, she ran an ad from this sheriff's deputy saying, I voted for Tommy Thompson three times. I'm voting for Tammy Baldwin this time because he's gone over to the side of the lobbyists and the drug companies and the healthcare companies and the oil companies. And so that was brilliant on her part. And then Tommy, first of all, he never articulated a real reason to run. I mean, Tammy Baldwin was on the regular career path, serves in the state legislature, serves in the House, runs for Senate. And Tommy was like on one last ego trip. And there he's on stage during these debates, and he treated her in such an arrogant, condescending, rude way, as though, who is this woman? She doesn't even belong on stage here. I built Wisconsin. And people have had enough of that.
Do you agree with that assessment, Kevin Hermaning?
You know, it's interesting. I did not vote for Tommy Thompson in the primaries a few months ago. I didn't think he was the right candidate to challenge Tammy Baldwin. I was at an event a couple of weeks ago in Wausau, and I saw Tommy Thompson. I talked with him, and I thought, you know, he did a much better job of articulating the reasons he was running that extended beyond just as Matt just referenced. He used the phrase ego trip. I saw it as maybe one more opportunity to serve. But I thought that there would have been a better challenge by somebody else back in the primary. But clearly it was not his chance. Tammy Baldwin became a national candidate running for U.S. Senate in the state of Wisconsin. Let's face it. She raised more money. Tommy Thompson's campaign treasury was broke after the primary. And the fact that in spite of the big headwinds coming from that national campaign against him, the demonizing him for having served for 35, 40 years in government and then finally going out and making a living for his family and the security of his family for the future, being demonized for that was just appalling to me and to all the conservatives I know. And then the Obama headwinds.
Let me jump in because we're almost.
Campaign.
I need to jump in because we're almost out of time, and I only want to give you each a minute for this. The Republicans will have an 18-15 majority in the state Senate in Wisconsin after a special election in December. How important is that, Kevin Hermaning?
Well, I think it's important because Governor Walker, who's a rock star in the Republican Party and rising nationally, is going to be able to complete the rest of his agenda, which is ensuring that our state isn't broke if the government were to flip over and become under the control of Democrats in the short term. The Republicans are clearly going to hold the Republican Assembly for at least the rest of this decade because of redistricting and the fact that they're providing real leadership. But honestly, I know a lot of Republicans who think and believe, as I do, that the Democrats are just going to pout and go to Illinois again. You might think that's contrived and sassy, but I really believe that that's probably what the Democrats in the Senate are going to do.
Only 30 seconds. Only 30 seconds for Matt. Do you think so?
Well, I don't think that's going to happen. This was the only cloud on an otherwise very beautiful starry night on Tuesday. But look, Walker is likely to push through his hideous agenda. He's going to ram through the mining bill that is literally written by the mining company. He's going to continue to voucherize and privatize schools, and he'll probably introduce right-to-work legislation that he promised Diana Hendricks, that hideous roofer in Beloit whose lap he sat on.
Well, we'll have to leave it there. Thanks very much, Matt Rothschild and Kevin Hermaning, for being with us. And you can tune into our state capitol report Monday at 7 o'clock. We will have Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter Sean Johnson and a couple of legislators talking with us about the future of state government after this week's elections. By the way, congratulations to Arnold in Oshkosh, who correctly got our quiz question right. We have Barack Obama's retweet broke a record. The previous record was set by Justin Bieber. Thanks very much for joining us. Have a good weekend. We'll talk to you on Monday. This is the Ideas Network.